Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I'd like to talk to Matt Derrick, if possible. ChiefsDigest.com. Hello, Matt. How are you?
I am just fine this morning, Stephen. How are you doing, my friend?
You know what? I'm having a good day. I had a good night last night because it was my wife's birthday. When I eat a bunch of Mexican food, how could I possibly be upset? And so it was a great family night. And I'll be heading to a track meet again and back to Smithville for the second time in a week. So getting all over the state. I love going to the different schools. So I'm in a good mood. And now we're going to talk some football. But first, of course, I've said my piece a few times on the show. If you want to hear more of it, you can go to the 810WHB.com podcast page and listen to that and what we said about the stadium vote earlier. Any reaction from you on the stadium vote not passing last night in Jackson County?
Yeah, I was just surprised at the margin. I thought it was going to be a fairly close decision. Polling certainly seemed to suggest that for it to be blown out the way that it was. It's kind of surprising. I also think it makes sense, though. There were a lot of unanswered questions. There was a lot of open-ended issues. There were some things that just didn't add up and make sense. Even now, I'm not sure that we could really say that the plan that was presented as it was ever going to come to fruition. There were going to be changes. And I think that worried a lot of people. The location of the Royal Stadium was problematic, and that I'm not sure it was completely well thought through and how it would impact the neighborhood and what the neighborhood response would be. Obviously, from the Chiefs side of things, I think that there wasn't a whole lot of detail in what they were going to do with the money that they were getting. And you throw into that, and I was talking with a colleague of mine that covers politics in Jefferson City, and their question was, you know, there was no resolution to where the state money was going to come from or what state money would be put into it. And his belief was that there was absolutely no way that money was going to be approved, that could be approved, that there was too much opposition in Jefferson City to do anything with this plan. So I don't know where these teams go from here, but clearly it's back to the drawing board, because this plan was not a good one, and I think that that's what the voters responded to.
It never felt like the Chiefs were as invested in this as the Royals. Like, when they put out the mailers and everything, they tried to, hey, the vote for the Chiefs, because they know the Chiefs are the popular thing in town. But when it came to the actual, like, effort that was being put into making this thing happen, it seemed like it was very Royals-driven. Do you agree with that, Matt? Like, it kind of seemed like the Chiefs were like, oh, okay, well, here's some renderings. Yeah, we'll take the money if it's there. It just never seemed as if they were as invested in this, to me, as the Royals were.
Well, I mean, and look at it. I mean, their plan for what they were going to do came out a month before the election, almost. I mean, that's incredibly late in the process. And again, it was not highly detailed. I mean, there wasn't even the activation zone was not clearly defined about what that was. I mean, and that's a marketing term. That's not a customer term. That's not something that you use to excite people about your project. I mean, you should have a different description of that. I mean, it just looked like a giant placeholder. And I mean, and I get that to a degree, because, you know, and this is why I think it's going to be best for these two projects to eventually be separated, because if the Royals' intent is to move, and it certainly seems like it is and probably should be their intent to go to a different location, I think it will be more successful somewhere else, then, you know, they can move, they can do their own thing, and then the Chiefs have the time to then do their own thing. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me for the Chiefs to have a detailed plan, considering that they wouldn't begin to be able to move shovel on this until maybe 2028, because they're not going to be able to do anything until the Royals are gone and out of Kauffman. So having to make a plan for a stadium that you're not going to start building in 4 years, a lot can change in 4 years. I mean, with stadium innovations and designs, there could be a lot of things that change and go differently. So to me, it didn't make a ton of sense for the Chiefs to have a detailed plan, and I'm not sure it made sense to them either, and that's probably why we got the plan that we got.
And let's be honest, in a perfect world for the Chiefs, the Royals leave Jackson County.
I mean, from an economic standpoint, for the metro and for, I think, even people in Jackson County, it makes sense for them to leave. I mean, and to be separated because, I mean, having one county just responsible for the entire financial aspect of two professional sports teams in this day and age, especially the size of Jackson County and Kansas City, this is not the biggest metro in the world. So to have one, you know, entity like that responsible for it, I think, is tough to do. And it's a big burden on Jackson County voters. And even though, hey, I mean, the teams were putting some of their money into it, too, there was still going to be a lot. I mean, that was $450 million of subsidies for both those teams over 40 years. So that's a ton of money. It's a ton of ask for Jackson County. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of reason to believe that if these two teams did separate and were in different counties, different jurisdictions, there's a way that the cost on the burden of the taxpayers can be broadened a little bit.
All right, let's get into the Chiefs. J.K. Dobbins was reportedly in Kansas City yesterday morning, and then the Chiefs signed Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Was it an either-or situation, or do you think they can end up with both?
I don't think it is either or, but I mean, the issue with the Dobbins and everything is coming off of the Achilles. It's just, when is he going to be 100% ready to go? Guys are coming back faster from Achilles, but, you know, especially for a running back in a skill position like that, I think it's even tougher. So, you know, I mean, I mean, a year would be typically the time that you would expect a player like that to come back and be ready to play at a certain level. It's not saying it can't be done at 9-10 months, because some guys have done it, but doesn't necessarily mean for a running back that it would be ideal. So, you know, we still don't know exactly when Dobbins would be ready to play. I think a team that signs him would love to get like a 2-year deal. You know, I mean, certainly 1 year for him to be able to get his feet wet, and the second year would be kind of the prove it year. I don't know what he's looking for from a contract, but I would expect that he would probably like 1 year and a chance to prove himself in a period of time, and then go out and get another deal next year. But, you know, the Chiefs have shown, I mean, they're willing to put some depth into the running back position. And so bringing back Clyde, they still don't have a, you know, another Jerick McKinnon type back. So not that Dobbins is necessarily that, but, I mean, just adding to the depth of that position, I think he'd fit in. It doesn't sound like he's ready to make a necessarily quick decision. And maybe he does want to wait until he's healthier so he can really kind of pick his place and what's going to be the best. If playing time is what he wants, though, that's the one factor, is that it's less likely, I think, for him to see more playing time in KC. He'd probably get more opportunities somewhere else. But if he wants to win, he wants to get good coaching and get in a good spot, this is probably the place to be.
So help my ignorance on something like this. When he comes to town, do they do anything physically with him to check him out, or is this just more like they're meeting face-to-face to talk about possible ideas going forward?
Yeah, they'll do a physical exam, and they usually will do x-rays. I mean, sometimes in a case like this, they may even do an MRI. They'll go through a medical exam of their own just to kind of see where he's at. And so I don't think they usually, especially in a case like this, go out and do any workouts or anything like that, but sometimes you will. But, yeah, the medical aspect of a visit like this is probably just as important, if not more so, for a guy like Dobbins than anything else. I mean, the other part of it is just going to be getting to know the player, making sure that somebody's going to fit your culture. But in this case, I think the medical will be the biggest aspect.
All right, some other topics with the Chiefs on the field. Carson Wentz is now the backup quarterback. Your reaction?
It makes total sense. Would have made sense a year ago, I know, when the Chiefs were interested in it, and it wasn't really where Carson Wentz was at that point. Now he is, and it seems like a good fit. You know, what's he going to play? I mean, I mean, I could see it. I mean, I'm not going to rule out the possibility that the Chiefs could have like a Carson Wentz package, especially in some short yardage situations, because even at the combine, Brett Veach was talking about having a quarterback that could run some quarterback sneaks and maybe do some things with Mahomes that they don't want to expose him to. At the same time, this isn't, you know, Wentz isn't a mobile quarterback. He's not going to be out there running the wishbone or the triple option or anything. So I think there's probably a limited use. But once again, it comes down to the Chiefs want a quarterback. that can keep the show going if they had to play with Mahomes for a period of time. And I think Wentz is that guy. He should be able to pick up the offense very quickly. He's played in it before. He's been successful in the West Coast offense, and he's played, you know, for Doug Peterson. So he's had the verbiage and everything of an Andy Reid offense. So that shouldn't be an issue. I know that, you know, hey, there's some concerns. Maybe he wants to be a starter, and, you know, has he fully accepted the role? Well, I'm pretty sure that he didn't sign in Kansas City if he hasn't fully accepted and bought into what they want him to do. So, makes good sense to me. I mean, Blaine Gabbert seemed like a decent fit, but he's a little bit older, and it wasn't exactly, you know, the prototype quarterback that you would have backing up Patrick Mahomes and maybe the Chiefs would typically have. But Carson Wentz is a lot closer to that model.
Rashee Rice, your reaction?
Knucklehead being a knucklehead. I mean, that's the most frustrating thing is that, you know, you like your players to exercise better judgment and not put themselves in situations like that. First thing I thought when I heard it was just thank goodness that they didn't seriously hurt anybody. But he's in a certain amount of trouble. I mean, we'll see what happens. There's a lot of things that need to still come out about this, a lot of facts. We don't know a whole lot about the entire situation. This is going to be a process, so we'll see what happens. I am sure that there will probably be some punishment from the league that comes down at some point. But as we saw in the Frank Clark case, I mean, that might not be until 2025. So the NFL will let the legal process play out. There's some at least advantages in Rashee Rice's, you know, case in that, like I said, that there wasn't any serious injuries. So, you know, it could lessen the legal penalties, which could certainly lessen any type of suspension. But, hey, be thankful that nobody was hurt. Let the process play out. But at the same time, make sure Rashee Rice gets it. Can't be a knucklehead.
Just in case, go ahead and draft Ladd McConkey just to make sure your wide receiver room is taken care of.
And that's the question. I mean, you know, do the Chiefs, you know, sign another free agent as insurance? I mean, I'm still assuming there's a decent chance that Mecole Hardman comes back into the fold, but that wouldn't necessarily be Rashee Rice insurance. They're definitely, I think, going to draft a wide receiver. The question might be if now they draft two. But I don't think that they're going to dramatically upturn their draft board just because of this, because I think they get the fact that there's a strong likelihood that, I mean, Rashee Rice is going to be available this entire season. I mean, if he's going to miss any time due to a suspension, it's probably going to be next year.
Let me get Jake Gutierrez all hot and bothered. Mark Caboli of The Athletic reported that the teams that are in on Tyler Boyd are the Dolphins, Chargers, 49ers, Lions, and Chiefs. What about Tyler Boyd? Do you think that's a possibility? Reasonable possibility?
I think it's a possibility. I mean, the Chiefs, you know, have been interested in Boyd since the beginning of free agency, but at that point, the price was too high, so they were not in the market. But at this point in free agency, players' demands dropped. Chiefs probably are motivated for a little bit to be willing to spend more money now for Boyd. Maybe they were a month ago, a few weeks ago. So I could definitely see it happening. We're also in that kind of lull period where, you know, you're close enough to the draft that that's where teams are really focused right now. And, you know, they kind of want to sit back and wait and see where they are after the draft and what they need. And then also, you know, you've got the free agent compensation formula that plays into it because, you know, after May 5th, anybody who signs as a free agent doesn't figure into the formula anymore. And, you know, right now the Chiefs, they're hanging on to two, you know, comp picks by the hair of their chinny-chin-chin. So if they sign like a Tyler Boyd, to, you know, for $5 million, they're losing a comp pick and putting another one in danger. So, I could certainly see that the Chiefs being interested. I could also see them waiting until after the draft to just see where things are. And they might be helped out by that, and that the free agent market this kind of time of year kind of freezes. A lot of teams don't want to make moves because they don't want to mess up their own comp formulas either. They don't want to lose a pick if they don't have to.
So, Matt, you mentioned that if you look at the Frank Clark situation, it could be like The Chiefs don't even know what happens with Rashee Rice from a suspension standpoint for an entire year. Like, is that a real possibility that it would be like this whole season? We don't even know what the punishment could be for what just happened.
No, it can absolutely easily. I mean, especially, you know, I mean, if this ends up being something that gets litigated and not settled out of court or anything, you know, then I could absolutely see, you know, if the judicial process doesn't get completed in the next 6 months, 7-8 months, yeah, I mean, I don't think there would absolutely be any penalty from the league until next year. And how many cases have we seen like this that are exactly that? I mean, the Frank Clark case was, you know, it involved guns, but it didn't involve any injuries, anything of that nature. And that process took almost a year in the legal standpoint to play out. So, I mean, to me, yeah, the only thing that could really change that is that if there's just some dramatic information that we learn, you know, the Kareem Hunt case is a great example of that, that, you know, sometimes there's something comes to light that just completely changes the situation. I mean, you certainly hope that doesn't happen in this case, but
yeah, like if another video comes out that's even more damning than what we've seen already or something like that, that could change things right away, right?
Yeah, and as Andrew Brandt on Twitter loves to say, there will be lawyers, so there will be every effort to make sure that, hey, this gets dragged out, one, to, you know, protect Rashee Rice this season, but two, I mean, dragged out just to protect his legal rights and to try and keep him out as much trouble as possible. And who knows, maybe we'll find out that at the investigation that he's not as involved as everybody seems to think that he is. I mean, you got to presume innocent at this point.
Do you think the Chiefs are not as concerned about left tackle as we are, the fans and the media? Because, I mean, I feel like they would have done something by this point. I mean, Donovan Smith's still out there. Some of the guys are still out there, but you're unless they know that they've already talked to him and he's going to wait. I mean, I don't know. Do they feel differently about Wanye Morris than we do as far as their faith in him? Do they feel strongly about this draft class? I mean, it's hard to read them, and good. We shouldn't be able to read them. But what do you think their approach is at left tackle?
Well, you know, and the funny thing is that I don't think that their approach to left tackle this year has been dramatically different than it was last year. I mean, they signed Juwan Taylor, and it was at that point, right now, a year ago, that we were thinking Juwan Taylor might be the left tackle. We didn't know for sure, but that was kind of the presumption, and the Chiefs kind of left it open-ended to say, yeah, you can play left tackle. You know, and remember, Donovan Smith didn't sign until after the draft last year. So that could certainly, once again, be the way that it plays out. I think they're concerned about it, but one difference from a year ago, they've got Wanye Morris. They've got a player that they've drafted to play the position that if they had to, I mean, I certainly don't get the sense that Wanye starting week one is plan A. He could, I mean, once they get to work, once they get to training camp and everything, maybe he's going to show enough improvement that they'll say, hey, wait a minute, maybe this should be plan A. I think that they will probably be adding a veteran. I think they, as Brett Veach mentioned at the combine, they want to add competition at that spot. So I don't think their plan all along was necessarily to go out and get a starter, you know, to just come in and be able to plug and play. But competition, that could be Donovan Smith, that could be drafting a tackle. I think they got a lot at their disposal, but they at least are in a different position than when they were a year ago, and if they've got somebody that has played the position, that's young, that they can develop and grow in Wanye, and if they feel comfortable enough for him to play, he can play. If not, and I think Donovan Smith may very well be back, you know, it might not be until after the draft, but I think Donovan's at a point in his career where there's probably only a couple of places that he would play, and Kansas City is one of them. I don't think he's going to go play for a team that's not got Super Bowl chances. I mean, that's kind of his mindset. So I think that if he's going to play, I think he would probably be in Kansas City. I'm not sure there's anybody else out there that, you know, you could really rely on, because there's some guys, sure, with a lot of talent, but a lot of injury history and maybe even just some performance issue history. So Donovan probably the base safe pick, but they can also go draft too. So a lot can happen between now and when this team actually gets on the field in May for their offseason workouts.
Look, and whether it's via free agency or trade or the draft, I mean, left tackle is the number one need right now. And then I would say wide receiver is number two. And if you agree with that, what's number three?
Yeah, I mean, I still think it's the defensive line and certainly depth that's just across the board. I mean, they have brought back everybody's defensive tackle for the most part, so it's not necessarily a huge need. But on the edge, especially since we're still expecting that, you know, they're not going to have Charles and Minnehue at the beginning of the season, so that's a depth hit there. Is that a position that you want to address early in the draft where you would get an impact player? You know, maybe not. So if Mike Dana were to come back and sign, I think you'd feel automatically better about the depth there. But that could be another spot where you're just looking to say, I mean, you need as many bodies at that front as you can get. And I think they'd like to have at least one or two. So I think there's at least one player they'd like to add beyond that, beyond just Mike Dana. But I mean, really, everything else to me would be like a wish list. I mean, the wish list might be a third safety, just because there's a lot of veterans out there that should be available at some point at a fairly affordable price, kind of like how you found Mike Edwards last year. But I don't think this team has a lot of holes right now.
Jake wants to know if you'll be attending Kelsey Jam.
Probably will be a pass for me. Mm. I mean, I saw the press release and the coverage, and it's not really a football story, so I kind of roll my eyes at it. Is it during the draft again?
No, it's going to be Saturday, May 18th. And so a few weeks after the draft, and the lineup right now that I'm looking at, perhaps Nate Bucati and Jake could weigh in on this. Of Matt Derrick, you're unwilling to attend Kelsey Jam. Lil Wayne, Diplo, and 2 Chainz. Yes or no, Nate Bucati on Kelsey Jam?
I would be interested in seeing those acts. I've seen Lil Wayne in concert once and enjoyed it.
Why don't you take your son out there?
Maybe I will. I think he would like that. Yeah.
So, Nate is a yes. Jake Gutierrez.
I'd probably go see Weezy. I don't really care much for 2 Chainz or who else was it?
Diplo.
I don't know Diplo. I don't know. I'd be into seeing Lil Wayne.
Okay. And it's a pass from Matt Derrick.
Yeah.
We get you in that GA pit if you want.
That, no? I think that adequately sums up my enthusiasm for the project.
All right. Just putting it out there.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, all right. I also have no idea who Irie and Evie are. So.
So Irie and Evie, they don't move the needle for you.
Not really moving the needle for me.
Okay. I was just asking. That's all. Nate's going. Is the fact that Nate's going, does that make you want to go, or does that confirm the idea that you're not going?
I mean, no offense, Nate, but if you are going, it does kind of bring make me believe I'm making the right choice.
Oh yeah, none taken.
Not that I don't want to hang out with you, because you're a quality individual, and I would enjoy that. But yeah. I have a feeling that our tastes are quite different in this regard.
Maybe.
You never know.
Matt Derrick, thank you so much for the time. We appreciate it.
It is a pleasure, gentlemen. Take care, my friend.
What you gonna do?
We'll send you
now.
Out there. Go out there. Do that.
I haven't been out to that. That's the old sandstone, right?
Sure.
It's just sandstone.
It's not the name of it.
It's not old. It is the name of it.
It's Azura Amphitheater.
Wrong.
Jake makes these decisions.
Mm-hmm. I think the greater Kansas City makes those decisions. I think people just call it Sandstone.
I'm trying to remember the last concert I've been to at Sandstone.
There you go.
I went to that was my first job in high school was working out at Sandstone.
What were you?
I was one of those guys that had to check your tickets to get down to the lower seats.
Yeah, that's the guys I would walk right by.
Exactly. Wow. especially about 135-pound high school kid that looked like he was 12
years
old.
I got your ticket right here, buddy.
Excuse me, sir. Can I check your ticket?
Can I please see your ticket?
I did not last long on that job. Pardon me, sir. This is
you were a target. Like
this is
like,
dude. This is a general admission ticket.
Yeah, I can't walk by that guy. I can't. I can walk right by that guy.
It was sold to me by my buddy Bill. He's like, man, it's awesome. We get to go to all these concerts, get paid. And I was like, okay, my back's to the concert the whole time, and I'm getting bullied by every 45-year-old drunk guy in town right
or
now.
Or 18-year-old drunk guy.
Yeah. Yeah, I got my ticket.
Right here. Look at it.
Oh, that job sucked.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
No one's first job's ever.
You had to bring your own flashlight. I remember that, too. You had to bring your own flashlight so you could, like, because you could look at your ticket.
Yeah.
I remember. Because it's just like you said, you're a target, right?
Yeah.
In those situations. I remember. How old was I? Was I even 21? Did I lie? I can't remember. But anyway, I got a job at a bar in Westport as a bouncer, right? As a doorman.
Oh, boy.
I think this and the same thing, you know, I had a guy, oh, this could be great and all, you know. And then I'm such a horrible mistake of informing.
I don't think this is one of the few jobs I don't think I've heard
of
about.
Of informing a few of my friends.
Oh, yeah. Right?
And who do you think I had the most problems with?
Your friends?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they thought, a carte blanche now, we could do whatever we want. And they made my life hell for, like, a couple of weekends, and then and then that was it.
Oh, yeah, every one of my buddies, hey, let us down.
Right,
yeah.
Right, yeah. Right. You know, my temperament did not match the job description.
I do remember at one point thinking, this is not worth $6 an hour. Getting this kind of verbal abuse from every...
There's a good chance you were verbally abused by Jake.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
For sure.
Do you think you did?
Oh, there's a really good chance.
Yeah. You're not stopping this guy.
No.
He's going to go sit where he wants to sit.
Yep. Yeah. Right. I wasn't.
Ticket takers and parking lot attendants. Pay no attention.
Let's talk to, up next, Dennis Dodd. We have Chris Walden and Marco Romero from the Golden Gloves. Scott Sharp from the Royals. Tell us all about that great start from Alec Marsh last night. A lot of good stuff between now and 10 o'clock right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Haven't talked to this gentleman in a while. Blame Jake. CBSSports.com. Dennis Dodd joins us. Hello, Dennis. How are you?
Steven, it's been a minute. How are you?
Doing great, man. Thanks a lot for coming on the show with us. We appreciate it.
You bet. And, hey, by the way, as I said, that first hour was great. You articulated everything. I know all you guys have lived here your entire lives. I've lived here 43 years. And that summed it up. It was really good.
Thank you very much for saying that.
I'm glad you brought that up, Dennis, because I was going to ask you, since you've been in this town for so long, if you have any thoughts yourself about just the way this thing's unfolded and where you think it might head from here.
Well, I agree with you guys, I guess, and a lot of people that I'd like to see it, but from a fan standpoint, it looks great. But as you described, the rollout, the communication, the lack of vision. I thought that, Sam McDowell at the Star has done a great job on this as well, writing columns about it, and I think very fair and very deep. The two major pro sports franchises didn't do their homework and didn't read the room, didn't read the metro area. So, let's hope it'll get done in some form and we can move on. But I just thought they assume too much, if that's the best way to put it.
Well, I agree. Well said. We have Dennis Dodd from CBSSports.com on the line. And, Dennis, you are in Arizona for the Final Four, correct?
I am leaving in a matter of hours, yes.
And so this Final Four, and look, I won it. First of all, for my bracket, I want UConn to beat Purdue in the national championship game, and then I can pretend I'm smart. But and hopefully I'm wrong, but right now it feels like we're just on the path to the coronation of UConn again and them winning back-to-back championships. 10 straight double-digit victories. Their average margin of victory in this tournament is almost 28 points. We just watched them run a really good Illinois team off the floor with a 30-0 run. I mean, we've just been asking for a team to hang with them, a close game to make it compelling. What is happening with UConn, and do you think anyone is going to actually give them a test in Arizona?
I think it's going to be really hard. I mean, based on what you just said, and that we all know, I was, after they won Sunday, I was trying to think, like, when has a team been this dominant in the tournament? I tweeted it, and people said, oh, Villanova in 2018. Well, Villanova didn't lay waste to the field the way UConn has. I mean, I go back to 73 in UCLA, where with the Bill Walton team, the last Bill Walton team, where he went, what was it, 22 out of 23, and they beat Memphis State. And it was an invitational. That's what this seems like. You know, the tournament seems like an invitation. Well, y'all can show up, but, you know, we're going to win this thing. And I just think it's really interesting that Danny Hurley, the coach, has kind of painted them as, oh, we're the persecuted, everybody hates us. And they, no, when did UConn, you know, everybody start hating UConn? I don't sense that. I think people really like UConn. But he's trying to use that as motivation for his team. I get what a lightning rod Zach Edey is in the middle for Purdue because he is so dominant. But the Klingon kid, you know, another seven-footer at UConn isn't that way. They've got a great backcourt, maybe the best backcourt in the country. Hurley is a hell of a coach and a hell of a recruiter. And every player, well, virtually every player on that team has been through this before. So I don't think you can underrate that in the fact that they're, you know, obviously favorites.
I'm curious your thoughts on this, Dennis. We've been spending a lot of time this tournament, Stephen and I, talking about how we've actually been more captivated by the women's tournament than the men's. And maybe a lot of that is because Kansas State and Missouri are not, you know, factors in the men's tournament like they have been.
What's that supposed to mean? Missouri didn't win a conference game.
Well,
so I get it.
Yeah.
I forgot for a moment.
I wasn't trying to, you know,
like, how are they not relevant in this tournament, Nate?
No. But it does seem like more than that. We've talked about, look, the biggest personalities in men's college basketball, Roy Williams and Mike Krzyzewski, are not there anymore. There seems to be more star power right now on the women's side in terms of like people that are almost household names like Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark and all those types of things.
Let me tell you something. Just for an example, Dennis, we were at dinner last night, a big family dinner, and my daughter, and she is the target audience. She's a freshman in high school, is a point guard for their freshman basketball team, has spent her whole life playing basketball, maybe seven times during dinner. Paige Beckers and Caitlin Clark on Friday at 7. Hey, you guys want to do a watch party? Let's go over. Where are we going to watch this game at? Over and over. And to her credit, she was a huge Paige Beckers fan, you know, a couple years ago when she was the player of the year as a freshman, and now she loves Caitlin Clark. She can't wrap her head around the idea that they're playing against each other in the Final Four, and not even talking about the teams. Right? Just talking about, like Nate said, the star power of those two players. And oh, by the way, we talk about all this, and there's an undefeated number one team on the other side of the bracket that no one's even mentioning. This is wild. It's great for college sports, for women's college basketball. But yeah, like what Nate said, what do you make of all this?
I'm glad you brought it up. I just spent 5 days in Iowa doing the Caitlin Clark story because, to me, that was the biggest story of the first round in either tournament. And what you're talking about, the bigger women's impact, still might be the biggest story as we head to the Final Four. Something's happening here, guys. It's really neat and really special. And I think it starts not only with Caitlin Clark, who's a great, just pure American story. It's for a guy like me, covering the college football playoff and realignment and all this stuff, it was so refreshing. Just to watch that play out. The access was great. And I think somebody posted this last night on Twitter or X that the rating for the Iowa-LSU game Monday night was bigger than the World Series, any game of the World Series, bigger than any college football game last season except Ohio State-Michigan. And just went down the list of these major events. Something's happening here with the women in the tournament in the country, frankly, because they are so identifiable. Because Caitlin Clark, you know, is now being offered $5 million to play in the Big Three, and while it may sound like a stunt, hell, I'd watch it. I'd love to see her go against retired NBA players. She's that good. Angel Reese, and I think part of it is that not only are they relatable, you know, people. To me, who's been away for a while, the women's game is so much more athletic now. They finish shots. The ball's not all over the place. And that's a tribute to the coaching, to the Kim Mulkeys, to the Lisa Bluters of the world, the Iowa coach who have made it better, to the AAU system, to the players themselves. And it's really, really fun to watch. It's not as restricted as the men because the court is so more wide open. They make threes. So I'm a huge fan. I mean, I'm going to try to find, well, I will find time to watch the women this weekend.
Okay, so you spent all this time working on the Caitlin Clark story. I hate to do this, but Jake made a great point yesterday. I try not to praise him too much. We've got to keep him down to keep him, keep him hungry. But he talked about, if Caitlin Clark pulls this off, the path that she has, the gauntlet that she would have to go through, like if this is the Caitlin Clark movie, you couldn't set it up any better. And it would be one of the most difficult paths to a championship if you think about it in any sport. In the Elite Eight, you've got to play LSU and Kim Mulkey and Angel Reese and the team that had your number last year and the team, the defending national champions that beat you in the title game, okay? Then, in the Final Four, Paige Beckers, who was the girl that was more highly recruited and ranked higher in high school than Caitlin Clark. Caitlin Clark grew up wanting to go to UConn. Paige Beckers goes to UConn, and UConn, you correct me if I'm wrong, really didn't recruit Caitlin Clark. Didn't show up to the gym to watch her. Didn't go after her.
Yeah.
And that was Caitlin Clark's dream school. And so now she has to, and Gino Auriemma, the unquestioned, the GOAT of college basketball coaches, UConn, 11 national championships under Auriemma. That's who they get in the national semifinals, and if they get past Paige Beckers and Gino Auriemma and UConn, South Carolina, as long as they win, will be 37-0. They'll face an undefeated South Carolina team in the championship. If she pulls all that off, well, I don't know what to tell you, Dennis.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, and that the Disney movie, the fact that coming in, they were in, as a top seed, they were in the toughest region, or quadrant, I guess they call it, in the second round against West Virginia. People forget this. Iowa averages 92 points a game. I think they're the leading scoring team in the country. They were held 28 points below their average on their home court by a West Virginia team that decided just to come in and play hack-a-shack, and it almost worked. The game was tied at 48 midway through the fourth quarter. Iowa won 64-54, but people still forget this. Caitlin Clark, in the final 16 minutes of that game, the last quarter and a half, had one field goal, still scored 32 points. Mm-hmm. Iowa had one field goal in the fourth quarter and won. So they're just looking for, the storylines are obviously, the emotional storylines are great. But so is stuff like that, having to get, slog through that. She threw the ball into the stands after the game, and I kind of went, that's pretty cheeky. Why'd you do that? She goes, I was throwing it to my family. The NCAA tries to take it away from her, but I'm not going to let them this time. And I thought even that was refreshing. If somebody else had done that, they'd gone crazy. Nancy Lieberman was there, who is the female Magic Johnson, by the way, for people that don't know, Googler kids. And I said, she goes, I asked her about that. She goes, who cares? She goes, if Dennis Rodman did it, if Russell Westbrook did it, if somebody else did it, nobody would give a shit. And she said those words. Sorry for the language.
I love it.
But that's what she said.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that just adds to it. It's just ball, man. It's the best of both genders right now. The women's tournament may be the best tournament right now.
And not for nothing, she threw a dime to her brother in the stands from half court.
Yeah.
Perfect pass.
Yeah, of course. I I don't want to make too much of it. Maybe I do. But I'm thinking about all these names and star powers and storylines that we have on the women's side, players that have – part of the reason it's such a good story between Iowa and LSU is because it's the same characters that we saw last year, right? It builds on the drama. These players and coaches that have been around for a while that you get a chance to get to know. And we talk about how fun the transfer – I know the portal exists on the women's side. But look, like I'm trying to get to know the stars in college basketball on the men's side, like Dalton Knecht. He's a transfer. You know, like how many guys, we all know Edie because he's been there for a while at Purdue, but how many of the coaches, how many of the players do you still have that same that same emotional attachment to? Do you think there's anything to that part of why the women's side is captivating us more than the men's right now?
Yeah. I mean, Alabama is in the Final Four with four transfers from mid to low majors that the average fan couldn't name. And the average fan couldn't name DJ Burns, you know, the 275-pound post at NC State until last weekend. Great story. But, you know, these guys haven't been there for 4 years. Caitlin Clark has been there for 4 years, and because of the COVID year, could have come back next year. But I think, you know, I think she makes so much in her endorsements that that's going to mitigate any limitations on a WNBA salary. But I do. Look, we've had how many years of Angel Reese now to develop this story, to build up the Monday night in this revenge match with Iowa and her pointing to her finger last year about the ring. And I thought, by the way, that Caitlin Clark defused that whole thing, didn't say a word, didn't act out. For all the criticism she gets for acting out on the court, and she does, you know, she could have taken that in a different direction, but didn't. And it was just, hey, we won the game, moving on. So I think that's a great point, Nate, the staying power of the women's players, because they don't, in general, transfer willy-nilly, contribute to the stability of the game.
Hey, Dennis, tell people where and when they can read your story on Caitlin Clark.
It is archived right now at cbssports.com. And I wrote, about five of them while I was there. But
right.
It's best just to Google my name and Caitlin Clark, because it'll show up.
We'll do it. Hey, Dennis, thank you so much for the time. We appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, guys. Be well.
Good talking to you. That's Dennis Dodd from CBSSports.com. We'll be right back after this on WHB. Hey, Nate, are we supposed to talk about what we did the other day?
I don't know. I think we could talk about it.
Yeah, you can talk about it.
I don't remember anybody telling us not to.
Talk about it.
I don't know what you're talking about, but yeah, you can talk about it.
Jake says we can talk about it. We're good.
Well, he doesn't know nothing, does he?
Was I there?
You don't know.
That's a question I expected to hear from you years ago, Jake. Was I there? part of you.
Physically.
I think they want us to talk about it.
Yeah.
Talk about it.
So, this actually has my family excited, especially Richie. Yeah, we forgot to tell Jake. He's oblivious to the world around him anyway.
What's going on there?
So, was it Monday? Yeah.
Yeah.
We went out to the Music Theater, Kansas City. MTKC.org. And coming up April 12th through the 28th at their live theater. Jake, remember the B&B Theaters off 435 Midland, close to...
Oh, yeah. I went and saw... saw a movie there about a month ago.
What'd you see? Must have been a good one.
No, I mean...
Unforgettable movie.
Right. Wow.
Did you guys go see the new X screen?
No.
Oh, that's in Overland Park. I saw the Dune 2 at the X screen at B&B in Overland Park, but I have the old... It used to be called West Glen.
Yeah.
435 in Midland. And so they have a stage there where they do live music theater, right? And so the Broadway version of Rocky is going to be playing there April 12th through the 28th. Nate has a connection, if you want to see who the connection is.
Eric Danielson, the PA announcer for the Kansas Jayhawks, does a phenomenal job at Allen Fieldhouse.
I know Eric.
His mom and sister are very involved with
Good man.
Music Theater Kansas City.
And so, and then he listens to the show, and he's aware of my love of boxing and Rocky, and he's aware of your love of talking.
Yep.
And so they approached us about being part of the production as the broadcast crew when Rocky fights Apollo.
We're the commentary team.
Right. The commentary team of Bob Dunphy and Jimmy Michaels. That's Bob Dunphy over there, and I'm Jimmy Michaels.
Hey, Bob and Jimmy.
Welcome in, fight fans.
Right.
I'm Bob Dunphy.
Rocky Balboa comes in tonight as an 80-1 underdog. Is there any way he can upset the undefeated champion Apollo Creed? Las Vegas doesn't think so.
How many times do you think, by the way, there were things like, let me hand it over to my good friend, longtime co-commentator and resident dumbass, Jim.
Jimmy Michaels over here.
Jimmy Michaels. Jimmy, you don't know what the hell you're talking about, Jimmy.
You guys got new pseudonames now.
So we,
Bob Dunphy.
We recorded, we did the voice track, but then they also recorded us on video. And so the way they have the stage set up, there's a screen behind the stage. So at times you'll hear our voice as we're commentating the Rocky and Apollo fight. But then you'll also see us on the big screen behind the stage as we're commentating on the fight. So Jake couldn't be more disinterested as he's staring down at his phone.
I was trying to figure out what I saw Oppenheimer there.
By the way.
That you know what?
When I have something stuck
now
in my
that
head,
adds
now,
to the story.
This will get Jake more engaged.
When
he gets to laugh at me because we're going through the script and you know, and there's parts of the fight where, and the champ is down, you know, and I'm doing this stuff, and I get to the end and I'm supposed to announce, you know, the fight being over, and this is Rocky.
Yes.
And I say to Steven, so how does the fight end?
Oh, God.
No, let me tell you something.
What?
That pissed me off so bad.
Oh, God.
No. This is how it was.
Whoa.
We were talking about
this. Because I wanted to get the tone right.
Because
the fight's over. No.
He looks down. Okay, look. He looks down, right? I've seen Rocky a lot, right? Not as much as I've seen Rocky 2 and Rocky 3. And this made me go back and watch Rocky because I wanted to see again, you know, how involved the broadcast crew was, all this stuff, right? Rocky's fabulous. And so at one point he kind of looks down because he knows that he has to admit this. He goes, hey, how does the fight end? And I'm looking at him, I go, this is like one of the most iconic moments in sports history, you know? So then we're trying to explain to him the idea of Rocky.
How about cinema history?
Like someone's, and one guy says, I said, you know, the idea of this wasn't for Rocky to win. He just wants to get to the final bell to be able to say he went 15 rounds with the champ.
Right.
Now, in the movie, we'll get a little bit deeper. In the movie, technically, the fight was a split decision, which means
the title stays.
Two judges for Apollo, one judge for Rocky. And, right. Rocky doesn't care.
No.
He made it to the end,
Eight
you know.
Man, baby.
And is the embrace of the bell, Apollo, you know, there won't be a rematch, you know, there won't be no rematch. And Rocky answers, don't want one.
Don't want one.
And then the music plays, and then Adrian, who's in the locker room, she didn't want to see Rocky getting beat up. She's trying to make her way to the ring.
She loses
her red beret,
and
she gets into the ring. And Paulie is being held by a security guard.
Pulls the rope.
No, no, I on you. And then she goes, Paulie? And he looks down, and so she gets through there, and he's going, and all the announcers got him cornered. Rocky, can you believe it? You made it 15 rounds with the champ. Right. Adrian!
Right.
Adrian! Adrian! Rocky! Rocky! Adrian! Rocky! I love you. I love you, Stu. I love you, too. I love you. I love you, Rocky. In full embrace. And still heavyweight champion, Apollo Creed. I love you, Rocky. I love you, too. In the end.
Beautiful.
Yeah. It's
beautiful.
A love story. It's not a sports movie.
Right.
This makes me feel like I need to watch Rocky all the way through.
You should, but the idea of it is he made it to the end, but he found his true love, and that's what made him a true winner.
Yeah. Man.
He was fighting for power.
Did you enjoy that? I enjoyed acting.
That was good. That really sold me on it.
Fighting to make the woman he loves proud. Right. Proud of him.
That's
because
right.
He'd been nothing.
And see,
he'd been
I think
his whole life.
As a tremendous actor myself, I needed to know the context of this so that I could deliver the line the right way.
Right.
Steven looked like he wanted to punch me in the face.
You're listening to sports radio.
You don't have to answer this, but what Rocky movie has the best ending? And there's only three nominees. Rocky 1, Rocky 2, or Rocky 3. And I watched all the endings back to back to back, and I can't decide. Because Rocky 1 has what I just illustrated. Rocky 2 has the legendary double knockdown where Apollo is trying to get up and Rocky gets up and he wins the title.
For me,
or Rocky 3, after Rocky beats Clubber Lang, but then it's Rocky and Apollo going to the gym.
Right. For me, it's easy.
And they get into the ring. Ding,
but what
ding.
About,
and then when they get in, and I'll never forget them being a Blue Ridge East and watching it, and they're sizing each other up. You know, he goes, oh, you told me everything. Almost everything. You got to remember, Stallion, you fight great, but I'm a great fighter. And they go, I taught you well. I taught you well. And they get ready to go, boom. And they get ready to both land punches and goes into Eye of the Tiger, and it turns into the Leroy Neiman painting. Sorry. I don't know.
About if you can change and I can change?
No.
It's okay, but it's not.
Still fine, but from those three, I don't know.
One.
It's
the fight in one, right? When Apollo is beating just the living God out
right.
of it, and in the 11th round, he knocks Rocky down, and he turns. He thinks he won, right?
Look on Apollo's face,
yeah.
when he's right, he's
like, like that look, like that. That is the most. Like that might be my favorite.
Yeah,
scene in any movie ever because it's like.
But do the ending of Rocky 2 when Rocky gets up and Apollo.
So it's round 11, Rocky 1, when he gets up
in the gym.
When he gets up, the look on Apollo's face is this utter defeat. It's like this guy is.
That's why Carl Weathers was great.
He's never. This guy is never going to lose. I can't. I've given him all I've got. And
that's
he's
right.
still getting up.
Just like you give this show all you got.
That's right. I want to
look
be
at
Rocky
you like, this guy,
11.
This guy won't stay down.
I want to be Rocky.
I need to see it. I need to watch it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Let's take a break.
We got some boxing.
I need to rest right now. The segment took a lot of
I wish you could have seen the look on Steven's face when I had to make that.
My headphones flew off just now. We'll take a break. Back after this on WHB.